Now, we're holding on page 32 in Gittin, Osmemvov. So we learned yesterday the story of how Shlomo went and how Shlomo sent Benayahu ben Yehoyada to capture Ashmedai and the whole stratagem that he used to do that. And now in the course of that, we learned about how as they were traveling from the mountain where Ashmedai lived to Yerushalayim, there were a number of things that happened on the way. Ashmedai knocked down a tree and knocked down a house. Fine, those Benayahu doesn't find the need to ask him about because he knows, Marshall says, Shadim are naturally destructive creatures, so therefore there's no chiddush in that. But he asks him about some of the other things. Amalei Benayahu. So Benayahu asks him, My time akichazisi lahu samya to have a katoi ba'urcha. Why is it when you saw that blind man who was lost and couldn't find the road, asikde la'urcha, that you helped him find the road? Now you're a shed. You don't usually, you don't usually help people, you usually harm them. Amalei, so Ashmedai says, generally speaking, that's true, but I'm not going to harm a tzaddik. Machuzei alei berakia, they announced about this blind person in Shemayim, the tzaddik gomorhu, that he's a complete tzaddik, and as we learned yesterday, Ashmedai being half malach, half person, then, because that's what Shadim are, and especially he's the king of the Shadim, and he said he goes and learns in the Mesivta Derakia every day, so he knows what they're announcing over there, that he's a tzaddik gomor. Umanda ovalei niyach nafshe, so anybody who does something that will satisfy him, that will help him, zochi la'alma da'asi, will be zeicha. So therefore, so I want that as well. I would usually harm people, but not a tzaddik like that. What's Ashmedai going to do with a chelik l'olam haba is a question in itself, but in any case, yeah, that's, he wants that. All right. Benayor asks him, my time of Lahu Ravya, the Katoi Barucha. Now then when we saw a drunk person who was lost on the road, also Asik de la Urche, you went and you helped him back to the road. Now we know that that guy was a Rosha, so why are we helping him? Ashmedai says, here's the opposite. Machuzi Alei Berakia, they announced about him in Shemayim, the Rosha Gomuhu, that this drunk person is a complete Rosha. But Abdele, Niyoch Nafshe, so I did something that would help him out, that would make him feel better. This way he gets his entire reward, this way he gets his entire reward in reward in this world, and he has nothing left for Olam Haba. All right, Benayor asked him, "My time chichazise lahu chedras abochis. Why is it when you saw a wedding you were crying? Is it because is it you don't like it when people are happy, or destructive creature, and therefore you don't like seeing people happy?" Amalei Ashmedai says no, because I can see what's going to happen over here in the future. Boy memas gavra begoy tlosin yomin. This chosen who's getting married over here is going to die within the next 30 days. Now his wife, therefore, is going to need Yibum, or Chalitza, as the case may be, because she and her husband didn't have a child together. So her husband only has a brother who's a baby, and it's going to take 13 years before that child is old enough to do Chalitza or Yibum, so she's going to be sitting there as an Aguna until he's old enough for Chalitza. Technically, in theory, he could do Yibum at a somewhat younger age, at 9 years old, but practically speaking, first of all, even that's a long time to wait, and second of all, would they necessarily want to do Yibum? Not necessarily. So therefore, she's crying over that she doesn't know. Right now, she's so happy at her wedding, but she doesn't know what's going to happen over here. Incidentally, in connection with the case with the two women and the baby that they were arguing over, the Meiri actually has an interesting explanation that they are also, the issue revolved around a matter of being chayev and yibum or potter from it. The gist is, he explains, the two women were a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. So now he says the daughter. So now what happens is, so the daughter-in-law has had a baby. Good, she thinks to herself, now I'm potter from Yibum. But then the baby dies. She, as the pasuk says, she accidentally rolled over on it in her sleep or whatever. Now she has a problem. Her mother-in-law also has a baby. If that baby is shown to be the mother-in-law's, then that makes him her dead husband's brother. And again, she's going to have to wait all those years until he grows up and can do chalitza or yibum. So she tries to claim him as her own baby. And then when Shlomo says, okay, let's get a sword and chop the baby in half, then she thinks to herself, you know what? That works out also. If the baby's dead, then there's nobody else to do chalitza or yibum with me either, and I'm still potter. So Shlomo realized what's going on over here, which is when that's why he declared he imoy, it's the mother-in-law's baby, and the daughter-in-law is trying to pull fast one over here. Yeah. But yeah, the Meiri says that in Yevamos, yeah. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, Benayohu asks the Ashmedai, "My time of Kishmaitilahu Gavra. Why is it when you overheard this person, the Amalei LaUshkafa, where he says to a shoemaker, obviously the Sonny Leshevshnin, make shoes that will last me for 7 years. Achichas, why'd you laugh about it? Is it just, again, you're a destructive creature? Is it that you don't like when people are making plans for the future?" Ashmedai says, no, Ahu Zayin Yom Lesley, that fellow is not even doesn't even know for sure that he's going to live for 7 days. Lesheva Shinin Boy, why is he even asking for shoes that are going to last him 7 years? Meaning, in other words, not necessarily is he going to die within 7 days, but in other words, I'm laughing at the foolishness of people that people think we have to make long-term plans and they don't even realize they have no idea how long they have to live and they might die shortly. So it's true, you know, a person has to make certain plans long term, but a person has to at the same time realize, you know, Olam Hazeh Yom LaProzer, like it says in Pirkei Avos, and that's Ashmedai says, I was laughing at that idea. Next. Benayo asked him, "My Tanaki Chazise, Lahu Kosma to have a Kosim. You saw that magician was doing his magic. Achichas, and you laughed at him. What do you have against him?" Amalei, so Ashmedai tells him, "You have a Yosef Abed Gaza de Malka." He doesn't realize he's sitting over there, the ground underneath him, there's a king's treasure buried underground. Right where he was sitting. Looks at my Ikatuse. If he really is able to do magic, then he should be able to divine what's right underneath, what's there, right underneath his feet. So that answered all the things that happened on that trip, again, with the exception of the few things that he destroyed, which we said shade him are naturally destructive, and with the exception of the fact that he didn't destroy the widow's hut that we talked about yesterday, which fine, that was because she pleaded with him for Rachmanos, and he didn't. We talked about yesterday what Reb Levick explains on this, that it means that basically with her appealing to the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachmim, in particular Chanun, that was able to break the koyach of Gvura that he possesses. And therefore, then in token of that, it says he broke a bone. Okay. The Gemara continues. Tarche gabe. Now Shlomo kept Ashmedai by him ad the banya the Beis Hamikdash until he had finished building the Beis Hamikdash. So he didn't just now. The whole reason he had Ashmedai in prison in the first place is in order to find out from him where the shomer is. And now he already has that information and he already has the actual shomer. Nevertheless, he still kept Ashmedai by him and was in no hurry to send him loose. Yom Echad have a koy l'chode. One day they were sitting together. Shlomo and Ashmedai, they were alone together. Omalei, so Shlomo asks Ashmedai, I have a question in a pasuk. Ksiv kesoyafos re'em loy. In Bilam's brachas to the Jewish people, one of the pasukim he says is that Hashem has the power of toyafos re'em. Now, the simple meaning of toyafos re'eim means like a toweringly high re'eim. A re'eim is some kind of creature with a very tall horn. It's mentioned in a few places in Tanakh, and it's mentioned in various places in Midrashim. So the simple meaning, in other words, like you have the height and the power of the horn of a re'eim, Hashem has that power. But Maharsha points out, the word kesoyafos literally comes from the Shodesh off, which means to fly. Re'eimim don't fly. So we have to understand that it's not kesoyafos and re'eim actually two different things. So Shlomo says, we explain, kesoyafos eva malachi asharis. When it says that Hashem has the power of toyafos, that means the malachim that fly around. Hashem has them at his beck and call to do whatever he needs done in the world. And re'eim elu ashedim. And when it says that Hashem also has the power of re'eim at his disposal, that means the shedim. And Maharsha points out, we find, for example, by Yitzias Mitzrayim, you had the Malachim were there to save the Jewish people, and you had the Shadim were there to harm the Mitzrayim. So Bilam was commenting on the fact that Hashem has both of those at his disposal to do whatever he needs. So the question is, Shlomo asks, Ma'ir v'saicho minan, now what's your greatness over us? Mela, in other words, Malachim, I understand. What's the greatness that actually that Malachim are such powerful creatures and Hashem has greater power and has them at his disposal. But Shadim are anyway half Malach and half person. Shadim are half Malach, half person. So in what way are you greater than us that Hashem should be priding himself on the fact that he has you Shadim at his disposal? Omale. So Ashmedai tells him, Shkoshul Shiltaminai, take off the chain from me, all the time he had been chained up with that chain that we learned about yesterday that had Hashem's name on it. The Havli Iskasach, and give me your ring. The Achli Locher Abusai, and I'll show you my greatness. This is the point where, if this was a movie, you'd be yelling at the screen, don't do that. But yeah. Shakli Lashashil Tamine, so Shlomo takes the chain off him, the Yahavla Iskasa, and he gave him the ring. And now Ashmedai has his power back. Bale, he swallowed him, or he swallowed it. Some Mephoshim explain that it means he swallowed the ring. Others explain that it means that he swallowed him, Shlomo, and then spat him out. Ashmedai then stretched himself out, one wing in the heavens and one wing on earth, because as we said yesterday, Shadim are, as we've been learning all this time, Shadim are half Malach and half human, and in that context then he belongs partly to Shemaim and partly to Eretz, so therefore, so to speak, his wings span that whole distance. Paske Arameya Parsi, and he threw Shlomo 400 parsa away. Which is the Yotar's 400 parsa is somewhere around 1,000 miles, give or take. So quite far away. It says elsewhere that Eretz Yisrael is 400 parsa by 400 parsa, meaning that it was thrown out of the entire Eretz Yisrael. Marsha refers over here to Targum that explains that this was all because we know there's three special mitzvahs of king, three special loses, as not to have too many wives, horses, or money. One of my boys once told me an interesting thing, by the way, they learned in school. The acronym for those three things spells out the word kisei, kesef, susim, and isha. So symbolically, like his throne stands on the observance of those three mitzvahs. Now, we know Shlomo violated all three of those. He had a lot of extra gold and silver that wasn't necessary just to pay his armies and for the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, like he's supposed to. He had a 700 regular wives and 300 concubines, whereas a king is supposed to have maximum 18 wives, and some machlokas, you're showing him whether the 18 includes Pilagshim as well or not, but still. And he had lots of horses, far more than he needed. 40,000 stables of them, it says in the Pesukim. So he was over on all three of them. So now, Targum mentions that because of that is why Ashmedai was given power over him and was able to kick him off the throne like this. So the Gemara continues, Allahu Shaita Oma Shloimer, Allahi Shaita Oma Shloimer. It was regarding that time when Shloimer was thrown off the throne, Oma Shloimer, that he says in Kehelis, Ma Yisrun La'odim B'chol HaMoleh Sheyamol Tachas HaShemesh. What profit does a person have for all of his hard work that he works under the sun? Meaning, in other words, that I worked so hard in the Beis Hamikdash, and I even had Ashmedai there to help me, and this is all that's left, is that I was thrown, what do I have good from it, is that I got thrown off my kingship. Uchtiv, and you have another pasuk where Shlomo says, this was my portion from all of my toil. So again, like, oh, this is all I have left after all that. Now, whenever we have the word zeh, means something that you can point to. So my vizeh, so what does this word vizeh mean? What can he point to that he says, this is what I have from all my work? Rav and Shmuel, so Rav and Shmuel disagree what he can refer to at this point. Chadam a makloi, v'chadam a gundoi. One says his walking stick, and the other one says his garment. Or there's a different girsa, and Rashi brings a different girsa from Rav Haigoin. Instead of gundoi, that the word should be kudoi, which means an earthenware cup, an earthenware mug, or a basin like that that he would use for drinking out of. So, in fact, elsewhere, the Gemara says, in Sanhedrin, the Gemara brings many parts of this and tells it somewhat differently, and it says that Shlomo had a downward progression in his kingship. First, he was king over both the heavenly beings and the ones on earth, as in we're saying over here, he controlled the Shadim as well. Then he lost his kingship over the Oyonim, and then eventually he gets to the point where he's reduced only to kingship over his bed, meaning like his immediate surroundings, and eventually he's a king only over his staff or his cup or his garment, as the case may be. One interesting point in that's given in that is, I mean, even when he's in this very reduced state, he still considers himself. He hasn't given up the concept that he's a king. If all I can be a king over is my staff, then that's what I'm going to be a king over. If all I have, if my entire kingdom is going to be my clothing, then that's what I'm going to be a king over. So, you know, he never lost his dignity as a king. There is also an interesting explanation. We know the Gemara tells us elsewhere that Shlomo made several takanas in Torah for the benefit of the Jewish people, and among them is the concept of Netilas Yadayim and the concept of Eruvin. Well, then the Eruvin are represented over here by the stick, as in like you have a lechi on the end of a mavui, or like the sticks and wires that you use to make a tzuras haPesach, and the cup represents the tzuras yadayim. So therefore, he's saying after all said and done, I still have those chusim with me, and that ashmedai I can't take away from me. Anyway, so now Shlomo is going around and wandering from one place to another, begging by people's doors. Kol hecha demati, and wherever he would go, Omar, he would say, as the Loshan Apostik in Kehelas, Ani Kehelas, Ho Yisi Melech Al Yisrael B'Yerushalayim. I, Kehelas, was king over the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. What do you mean, was? Because he's saying this now when he's not king anymore. So he's going around from one place to another, and people thought that he was crazy. Ki Mata Gabi Sanhedrin, eventually he made it to the Sanhedrin. Omer Rabbanon, so the Rabbanon in the Sanhedrin said, Mechti, let's consider, Shoite B'chodem Milo Lo Yisorich, a crazy person doesn't just stick to one thing. A crazy person will say different random things at different times. This guy, the one crazy thing that he's saying is Ani Kehela, so you see Melech, so then maybe he's not so crazy, maybe there's actually something to it. My high, so what's going on over here that he's saying the same thing over and over again? So maybe there's a certain truth to it. Omru Leila B'Nayahu, so they asked B'Nayahu, Kaboyloch Malka L'Gabay, has the king recently called? Now what happened was, when Ashmedai kicked Shlomo off the throne, then he took on Shlomo's appearance, and he was sitting on the throne and ruling in Shlomo's place. And nobody realized all this time that there's anything wrong, because every day they come and they see what seems to be Shlomo there and is really Ashmedai. So now they ask B'Nayahu, has the king called you into his presence recently? B'Nayahu was, we find in the Psukim, he was Shlomo's chief general and various other things, so you would expect that Shlomo would be calling on him frequently. Amalohu loy, so he says no. And, you know, that starts raising suspicions. Well, now if it's Shlomo, why not? But if it's Ashmedai, well, that's easy to understand. B'Nayahu is the one who captured him, so naturally Ashmedai doesn't want him around any more than necessary. They sent a message to the queens, to Shlomo's wives, Ka'osi Malka L'Gabaychu, has the king recently been visiting you? The wives sent back a message, Ein Ka'osi, yes, he's been coming. So the Chachamim sent him a message, Bidkan B'Kare, check his feet. Shadim, it's brought in various places, have feet like the feet of chickens, rather than normal human feet. One interesting thing that's brought in that connection, you know, we talked about yesterday, it says in Pirkei Avos that the Mazikim, the Shadim, were created Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmoshes, so there's an interesting explanation that Hashem, so to speak, left their feet incomplete, didn't finish making them in order to demonstrate a lesson to us that when Shabbos comes, you drop your work, no matter how important it is.
Wow.
Yeah. So check his feet. Shocholohu, the wives sent back a message, Bumuki Ka'osi. Can't. He always comes with slippers. He always comes with slippers or socks on. So we don't know what his feet look like. This starts getting suspicious. The Kaptovel, and not only that, the wives continue, the Kaptovel who beneath the Saihu. Shlomo is asking us for Tashmish even when we're Nidah. Shlomo would never do that. And the Kaptovel non nami lebat sheva ime. He's even asking for his mother, Bat Sheva, for that. Now the Chachamim realize, okay, we see what's going on over here. This is obviously an imposter. As you are the Shlomo, so they brought in Shlomo. Now we're going to get you back to kingship. They gave him a new ring that has Hashem's name on it, because he had lost the old one, whether Ashmedai swallowed it or whether whatever happened to it. And a new chain that has Hashem's name engraved on it. So now we can use those to subdue Ashmedai again. Ki ayil. When Shlomo came into the throne room, Chazye, Ashmedai saw him, parah, and he flew off. He doesn't want to get chained up again with the chain, so he flew off, and then Shlomo didn't see him again. Nevertheless, Shlomo was still afraid afterwards of Ashmedai, and therefore he had to take steps in the future to guard himself against Ashmedai coming and harming him. Dichtiv, behind her dichtiv, thus it says in the pasuk, Hini mitosid shel Shlomo, here is the bed of Shlomo, Shishim giborim saviv lo, 60 mighty men around it, mi gibori Yisrael, from among the mighty men of Yisrael, kulam achuze cherev, all of them are holding swords, melumde melchama, all of them are trained for war, ish chaber al yurechai, each one has his sword on his thigh, mipachad balelos, because of fear by the night. Now, there are many, many different explanations of what that pasuk means. It refers to the Beis Mikdash, it refers to the 60 mighty men, refer to the 60 letters of Birkas Koyanim, it refers to the 600 to the 60 times 10,000 Jews surrounding the Mishkan in the desert. It has many, many layers of meaning, but in the most simple sense, it means that Shlomo is partially afraid by night now that Ashmedai might get him, and so from now on he has 60 people surrounding and guarding his bed every night. So in fact, the Gemara says, Rav and Shmuel argue whether, what was the story with Shlomo's kingship? Chad Omer, Melech the Hediot, one of them says, Shlomo started out as a king, and then he ended up being a Hediot, he ended up being a commoner, and never returned to his kingship. V'chad Omer, the other one says, Melech the Hediot or Melech. There was this point in between where he was a Hediot, where he was a commoner, as we said, he was going around and begging and nobody knew that he's Shlomo. And meanwhile, Ashmenai is impersonating him. But afterwards, he went back to being a Melech. Now, Marsha asks the question, the fact is we see very clearly in the Pesukim that Shlomo ruled for 40 years and he passed away and was buried among the kings in Yerushalayim, so there's no question that he passed away still a king. How is the Gemara bringing over here an opinion that he remained a Hediot? So in fact, Marsha says maybe you could say he ruled for 40 years, then came this whole affair with Ashmedai, and according to that opinion, then after that, so in other words, the Pasuk is telling us he ruled for 40 years, and then would mean then at that point he was kicked off the throne by Ashmedai, and then he didn't have a chance to recover his throne fully before he passed away, whereas the other opinion would say that he did fully. That point, actually, there are, Ion Yaakov also refers over here to Yalkut Shimoni, which also says that this happened at the end of Shlomo's reign, which would neatly answer that question. On the other hand, there are Mephoshim who say that this happened earlier in Shlomo's reign. In particular, again, we said, so Marshad referred to the Targum that had to do with the three things that Shlomo was violated. But there's also, in some places, it talks about, in particular, it had to do with the fact that he married Bas Paroi. Out of all of his wives, his favorite was Bas Paroi. First of all, La Halacha, it wasn't so simple to marry her in the first place, because the din is a Mitzri convert, man or woman, is not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people until three generations. So, okay, you have an opinion of Reb Shimon that it's allowed, but still, that's only, of course, only a Das Yochid, and some Mephoshim say maybe, in fact, the Paroi's of Mitzrayim at that time are not native Mitzrayim, maybe they're foreigners who had invaded and taken over the country, so maybe there were Hertatim for it, but still, we find that this Bas Paroi had a bad effect on Shlomo. She had him sleep in late on the morning of the Chanukah Sabayis, so they couldn't even start the Avodah until he woke up. That's a whole long story in itself, so according to that, that would have been relatively early in his kingship. He started building the Beis Mikdash in the fourth year of his reign, and they finished it in the 11th year of his reign, so according to that, this story may have happened much earlier, and in that case, a number of the Mephoshim say, when the Gemara says the opinion Melech the Hediot, doesn't mean that he died completely a commoner, as in with no royal title or anything at all. It just means he never went back, according to that opinion, to the same degree of kingship as before, in particular to rule over also the Oyonim, and to have everybody fear him, and to have everybody come and want to hear his Chochmah and so forth. So he's a king, like any other king in the world, but not necessarily the unique kingship that he had before that. As far as this whole story, the Maharal has a whole symbolic explanation of what happened over here with this whole thing with Ashmedai kicking him off the throne, etc. The gist of it is he explains the chain represents that Shlomo has a connection, has a dveikus with the Eibishter. And the ring represents a signet ring which has a tzura, which has a figure on it, that represents the tzura of a person, the ideal of what a person is supposed to be. So Shlomo, up until this point, had those. He had the chain, he's completely chained up and connected to Hashem, and he has the ring representing his tzura, that his neshama is where it's supposed to be. Then, though, he started going off, as we're saying over here, he is over on his mitzvahs, he married Bas Paroi, etc. That caused, so symbolically, we represent that by him taking off the chain and the ring off Ashmedai, meaning, in other words, that he's losing his level of high connection to Hashem. The result is, therefore, that basically Ashmedai takes him over, in the sense, the Maharal essentially understands that what happened was not so much that Ashmedai kicked Shlomo off the throne and ruled in his stead, but rather that, in effect, Ashmedai becomes Shlomo, or Shlomo becomes Ashmedai. He becomes now enmeshed in Kirchus Atuma, represented by Ashmedai swallowing him up and spitting him out and throwing him out. In other words, he became a whole different kind of person. So eventually, so now, the Chachamim start realizing what's going on, that Shlomo is not ruling as the way that a Jewish king is supposed to anymore. So they ask Benayahu, has the king wanted to see you lately? They ask the wives, check his feet, which represents the feet are what a person stands on. So it represents what a yid is supposed to stand on in terms of his connection with the Eibishter. And then when they realize that Shlomo has been taken over by Ashvedai, so then they realize, well, what are we going to do? How do we restore Shlomo to what we need to be? So they realize we have to reaccept his kingship on ourselves, because that's the people, as they ever talked about in old time in Sichas, that when the people say Yichi HaMelech and other expressions like that, it gives koyach to the king. So we will use our koyach of reaccepting him as king to bring him back to where he's supposed to be. We'll give him a new chain and a new ring representing, we'll reconnect him with the Eibishter the way he's supposed to be, and then that will get rid of Ashmedai, and sure enough, that's what happened. Okay. Now, at the beginning of the Perek, it had started by talking about the reason why we got into this whole thing of Shadim is because the Mishnah had described a person who was seized by Kordi Yakus, which we said was a shed, who attacks somebody who drinks a lot of new wine. Then the Gemara had mentioned some remedies for that, and by the way, the Gemara had mentioned some remedies for some other things when a person is chilled or a person is overheated, etc. So now, having digressed to talk about the whole story with Shadim with Ashmedai, now the Gemara goes back and spends about a daf and a half over here discussing various remedies for various kinds of illnesses. Now, what is the Gemara doing with all of this? Maharsha explains as follows. First of all, by the way, as far as these remedies, it's brought in many, many Sfarim that we don't do them nowadays. We shouldn't do them. That's what the Maharil already brings. We shouldn't do them because they're not necessarily going to work for a variety of reasons. Among them, we don't know what all of the ingredients are. Some of them, there are different opinions. Nishtanu ativim, also we often say that people's natures have changed now that we live in different climates and do different kinds of things and so forth than they did in the times of the Gemara. So not necessarily would remedies that worked then work now. And therefore, if a person does them and they don't work, then he's going to start doubting maybe other things that the Chachamim said. He's going to start doubting them as well. And that can lead to weakening his emunah. So Maharsha discusses then in that case, what's the point of mentioning? Not only that, Maharsha points out another thing as well. The Mishnah tells us in Psachim, and the Gemara discusses it in Brachas, that one of the things that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did in his times, which was unusual and which the Chachamim praised him for, was in his times there was a book called Sefer Refuos. Some say Shlomo authored it, some say it went back before him, whatever. It was a book that had all kinds of remedies for different illnesses and conditions and whatnot, and Chizkiyahu hid it away. And one reason is, Rashi explains over there, so that people wouldn't be relying on the cures, so they should realize to rely on the Eibishter. The Rambam, by the way, has a whole different understanding of it. The Rambam actually very strongly attacks that explanation. The Rambam himself was a doctor, so he has a whole different take on the matter. He says that no, either what happened was, he says that where the problem with this book was, either the cures in it were based on magic, so then you're not allowed to do them. You're not allowed to do magic in halacha. They could learn them because the Chachamim have to know these things in order to know, to judge cases where a person does them, but not to actually practice them. Here in Chizkiyahu's times, people were actually starting to use them. Or the Rambam says another very interesting point. Some of them were actually things that could be used as poisons. Bechlau, you have a lot of things, most medicines, a lot of foods as well. There's a famous medical expression that says the dose makes the poison. Sometimes you have a tiny amount of something is good for you, and a little more of it is not so good for you. So people were using it to poison their enemies and whatever, and therefore, so the Rambam says that's the reason Chizkiyahu hid it away. In any case, the Maharsha says, given all that, then why is the Gemara in effect giving us another safer reverse of it here? If the whole point was that Chizkiyahu was justified in hiding it away, then why is the Gemara giving us another one? So Maharsha explains like this. It's true that, of course, you have to do medicines. You have to do cures. Nitin reshus l'roi f'l'rapis. You can't reveal it to everybody because, again, you have that problem. As Rashi said, people are going to end up trusting in the cures rather than the Eibishter. Now, so it should have been that all of this remains val peh. So it was written down, which is in Chizkiyahu didn't want that it should be publicly accessible to everybody, which is why he hid away the book. Now, we talked about earlier in our Masechta, Torah Shabbat Peh in general was supposed to be kept Baal Peh. But eventually there came the point when the Chachamim had to write it down because Eis Lasis Lashem, otherwise Torah Shabbat Peh was in danger of being forgotten. Therefore, Maharsha says the same thing over here. These Refuos comes Ravina and Ravashi, who are compiling the Gemara for us. They had no choice. They have to write down these Refuos as well, otherwise they would be completely lost. Okay. So the Gemara says, L'dama de Resha. when you have so there's a lot of unfamiliar words and phrases and expressions over here. So I have myself a little cheat sheet over here to try to remember some of the translations, but we'll do what we can. Most of the translations are going to be based on Rashi, but there are some other Sfarim that address it, and some other Mefoshim and some other Sfarim that address some of these things as well. Okay, so the Gemara starts off L'dama d'resha. For a person who has a headache because of too much blood in the head, so basically like high blood pressure, leisa shrubina, you should take shrubina, which is a type of cedar wood, ubina, and an arova, the osadora, and a fresh hadas, the chilfa, and a chilfa, which is a piece of wood from a poplar tree, the chilfe diyama, and Rashi translates chilfe diyama as cloves. Then there are a couple of other explanations among Mefoshim of various other possibilities what it is. The Oroch translates it as rosemary, and there's one or two other possibilities. Anyway, so you take that, the yavla, Rashi just translates as a type of grass. So you take all of these ingredients, v'lishlokinu bahadi hadodi, cook them all together until you have a liquid made out of all of them. V'lintel tlasmer kasia hai disideresha, or tlasmer kasia hai disideresha. Then take 300 cups of the mixture and pour it on one side of the guy's head and 300 cups on the other. 300 often the Gemara uses as a large indefinite number. Doesn't that mean 300 and not 299? It just means a very large number. The Eloi, if not, meaning if a person tried it and it didn't work, or if he doesn't have all of these ingredients available, or if nobody has the patience to sit there and pour 300 cups on each side of his head, Laisi Var de Chivra, then he should take a white rose, Dekoi B'chadora, where it has to be white, and it has to be that all of the leaves of it are all on one side of it. Normally the leaves of a plant grow alternately on the different sides of it. That way they get the maximum amount of sun. Here, you want one where all the leaves grow on one side of the plant. The lishlake, you cook that rose, again, to make a kind of syrup. The lintel, shittin kasia, high gisidadesha, the shittin kasia, high gisidadesha, and then you pour 60 cups of it on one side of his head and 60 on the other. Reb Levick has an interesting explanation of this one, of what the problem is and what the remedy is. So he explains like this. When we're saying over here that there's too much blood, there's too much high blood pressure, and therefore the person is having a headache. Now he says like this, it's supposed to be Moyach Shalat Alalev, as we know from Tanya. And that represents also Moyach Shalat Alalev, also represents that a person has the back and forth of Rotzei V'Shoi. A person wants, has a feeling of Rotzei, that I want to escape my body and go unite completely with the Elokus. But then there's Shoi, that's from the excitement of the heart. Then comes the coolness of the brain and tells you, well, calm down a little bit. The Eber should put you in this world to stay in this world. So now when he has a headache because too much blood in the head represents he has too much Rotzei and not enough Shoi. So therefore he says, the remedy over here, he says, if you count the number of ingredients over here in the first recipe over here, you find there are 7. That represents, therefore, so what you need to do is basically you need to restore the strength of his moyach, represented by tefillin. The tefillin, you have a shin with 3 heads on one side, a shin with 4 heads on the other. There's your 7. And so he explains, therefore, the 7 ingredients over here, and he explains how they break down. 3 of them are from trees, 4 of them are from plants, so therefore they represent the 3 and 4 respectively, and he goes barichos and explains how each one of them represent, the 3 represent chokhmah, bina, and das, the 4 represent chokhmah, bina, and the 2 aspects of das, and so forth, and therefore, so you pour it on the guy's head, and that way you're restoring to him the power that his moichin should have. Then he goes on to say, the Eloi, and then we're saying, if not, meaning you have to work on him on a different level, which he talks about over there that relates the Rochel somehow, whatever. Then he explains also you have the white rose over there, the white representing chesed, and that the leaves are all on one side representing that's complete chesed, and you use that to help him out as well. What? This is Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father.
Always give him the blue book.
Yes. It really is true. A lot of times you learn a Gemara, the way Reb Levick teaches it. It's a whole different Gemara, yeah. Next, the Gemara continues with tzlichsa, when a person has a migraine headache. So tzlichsa literally means split. So it means that split, half his head hurts and half doesn't. The word migraine actually comes from a word in Latin that literally means half the head. So yeah, Anyway, so Lacey Tanugola-Bora, he should take a wild chicken. That might be the same Tanugola-Bora that we talked about yesterday in connection with the Shamir, in which case it would be the bird that we said was called Nagotura, a hoopoe in English, or it might just mean generally a wild chicken, whatever. The Lishchate Bezuza Chivra, he should shecht it using a... He checked it using a new zuz. Chivra literally means white, because when you have a coin, a silver coin, comes fresh out of the mint. It's whitish in color, so therefore you take a new coin like that, and you use the edge of that as a blade to shech the chicken. Ahahu gisa de kayev le, do it over the side of his head that hurts. So if it's the right side of his head that hurts, then do it over the right side, and similarly with the left. Then he's dahem midame, but be careful about the blood of it, because if the blood gets into his eyes, it could make him blind. Then the litlia, the sefer debava, then what you do is take the dead chicken, the shechted chicken, and hang it on the doorpost of the door, as he goes in and out of the house every time. This fellow who had the migraine is going to rub against this dead chicken that's hanging over there, and that will cure his migraine. You know, it might be one of those kinds of things where, you know, the cure is worse than the disease. You know, fine, I'll pretend I don't have a migraine anymore. I don't have to be rubbing against a dead chicken every time, but I don't know. Replevik has an explanation on this one as well, that the slichas over here represents basically that a person has that a person has too much gvuris. So he explains that particularly it would refer to the half of his head that has too much gvuris, and therefore the remedy for it is to take this wild chicken and shecht it, which represents basically the same way as bekaparis. We shecht the chicken in order to sweeten and moderate the gvuris. So the same way over here, the idea is that the shechting the chicken and the whole procedure over here involves moderating the gvuris that's causing him to have this migraine. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues with Baruksi. If a person is suffering from Baruksi, Rashi translates it as a cataract. There are other places where Rashi seems to imply that it's something more like a growth over the eye. In any case, Lacey Akrava the Shev Chumri, a person should take a scorpion that has 7 different colors on it. Rashi points out, in other words, the idea is as a scorpion gets older, it grows new parts every year and they change colors. And by now, the scorpion has 7 different colors on it, meaning that's quite a few years old. There's a sefer called Medrash HaRefuah, which deals with some of these gemaras about remedies like this and here and in different places in Shas. He explains that it means in a similar vein, every year the creature grows a new growth ring on its tail, so Shev Chumri would mean that it has 7 growth rings like that, representing that it's lived for 7 years. The Niyab Shibatula, take the scorpion and dry it in the shade, meaning don't put it in the sun to dry, but put it someplace outdoors where eventually it'll dry, but in a shady area. The nishchet tauti manasa kochla, then grind up two parts of eye shadow. Which was a powder that they used to use in those days for eye shadow and also as an eye remedy. They used it for various things around the eye. V'chodem anosimine, and one part dried scorpion. Then v'limle tlosa machli b'hayena, then fill up, meaning apply, 3 applicators in one of this mixture in one eye, plus a machli b'hayena, and 3 applicators in the other eye. Rashi describes that the applicator would be, for example, a feather or a piece of wood or whatever that they would use when you're applying this kind of eye shadow to the eye. You would dip a mikhel into a shveferes, into a tube of the powder, and you'd apply it to the eye. So here you put three applicators like that of this mixture in each eye. Say loy limli, don't put any more than that, de loy, because if he doesn't listen to that and he puts more, poka ene, his eye could burst, because this medicine is so powerful. Next, l'shabridi delela, if a person has night blindness, unfortunately for the rest of this, we don't have Reblevik's explanations. We only had for the first two, more's the pity, but yeah. The Shabrir Delele, when a person has night blindness, Nasi Shudra Barka, he should take a rope made out of hair of an animal. So it actually says, let's say, for example, it could be made out of the hair from a horse's or a cow's tail or whatever. Venesa choda karamine, tie one end of the rope to the person's leg, to the person who's suffering from this night blindness, v'choda karamikalba, and the other end of the rope tie to the leg of a dog.
The
Nitzra for Yanuki Chaspa Bas, right? Now he should be, children should go, behind him and be, children should go behind him and be making noise, and then be making noise with earthenware shards behind him. So they're going to take broken pieces of earthenware and bang them and one against the other to make a noise behind him. The lame relay, and they should say the following lachash, Osa Kalba Achsa Tanagola. Old dog, stupid chicken. What that means, I don't know, but that's some kind of lachash that was effective for it. Yeah. That's part one of it. The ligbe shave umse meshiva bati. Now this person who's suffering from this night blindness should go and collect 7 pieces of meat meshiva bati from 7 different houses. So go around to 7 different neighbors or whatever and get a piece of meat from each one of them. Vele svinu niale b'tsinoda d'dosha. They should give it, those people should give him the meat by the door. Specifically, tsinoda d'dosha means the hinge of the door. Doors in those days were made, the hinges of them were kind of like Lego doors, instead of having hinges on the side of the door like we have nowadays. You'd have a pin that went into the lintel, and you'd have another one that went into the threshold. So tsinoda d'dosha means that socket where the hinge pins go into. Anyway, they should give it to him over there. He should eat these 7 pieces of meat by the garbage heap of the city. After that, lifshit shudra barka. After that, he should untie the end of the rope that's attached to his foot. The name ruhochi, and the people who are there should say the following: shabrudi the pliny bad plonisa, the blindness, the night blindness, the pliny ben plonis, shafkinua the pliny bad plonisa, leave pliny ben plonis, the lechru the kalba bibabisa deene, and then the last thing they should do is lechru to the dog in the pupil of its eye. Now, what does lechru mean? There are several different explanations. It could mean different before. Rashi doesn't say what it means. It just means that Rashi just translates bibabisa deene as bibovas ene. So there are several possibilities. It can mean that they should blow at the pupil of the dog's eye, the one that was attached to him with the rope. It can mean that they should burn it, or that they should stab it. Or fourth possibility is, it's not saying what they should do, it's saying now the blindness will go from him, the lechru will transfer from him, the babisa, it'll now transfer to the pupil of the dog, and the dog will now have this problem of the night blindness, and the person won't anymore. Again, what all this signifies with Nimis and Yonim, I don't think any of us know.
Wow.
Okay.
Sotis Atera,
yes. As Marshall said, these are remedies which the Chachamim had to write down, because otherwise they would have been forgotten altogether, yeah.
How could you forget those?
Yom Yem Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yud Nissen. So we know on Yud Nissen was when the Jewish people in the Mitzrayim bought their animals for the Korbanos, and the Mitzrayim are asking them why. So, and we know, as we know, the Mitzrayim worshipped sheep, and therefore you can imagine how difficult it was for the Jewish people to do that, to stand up to the Goyim and say, we're going and taking your getchka, and we're going to shecht it. And Chazal tell us that, in fact, it was just that. They had that Mesiras Nefesh, they had that strength, and they did that mitzvah, and they weren't worried about what the Mitzrayim's reaction are going to be, and with that, they brought the Goyim. Thus we see, therefore, Yetzias Mitzrayim was brought about by that strength and that firmness and that Mesiras Nefesh, the same way nowadays, when we have that same kind of firmness and Mesiras Nefesh for keeping Torah and Mitzvahs, that will bring the Gola Asidu B'mehed of Yameinu Mamash. Continuing on halachas of Eruv Tchumen and related things like this. Now, you have a concept called Ein Tchumen L'mayla Ma'asara, that Tchumen don't apply above 10 Tvachim. Actually, the Gemara in Eruvin discusses whether that's the case or not. In any case, so now you can have a person, for example, comes in a boat, and the boat docks on Shabbos, or you could have nowadays, for example, a person is on a cruise and it docks on Shabbos. But you could also have, for example, a person is on a plane and the plane was unduly delayed and ends up landing on Shabbos. V'chlal, you got to be careful with that kind of thing, not to travel, not to plan a plane flight too close to Shabbos. There have been cases. There was a notorious one a few years back where a plane was supposed getting close to Shabbos, the flight was delayed, people demanded to be let off the plane, and instead the pilot took off and they wound up having to spend Shabbos in Athens, so such things have been known to happen, but in any case, so now when you arrive, then the idea would be, in the case of a boat, then you're always above 10 tefachim from the ground, and even the Sufik, the Altadeba adds, you can also be Mekel. in the case of a plane also, until a half a second before the plane lands, you're also above 10 tfokim from the ground. And I mean, even within that, the plane itself, your seat in the plane is also well above 10 tfokim anyway. So therefore, so you're not really koinah shvisa until you land. So in the case of a boat, he says over here, you would have the port itself in 2,000 amas in every direction, because you were not in Koine Shvisa until then. In the case of an airplane, actually, I've seen different points that different contemporary Rabbonim talk about it. The one possibility is you're Koine Shvisa on the runway, but the runway is a lot bigger than Beis Hasayim, and therefore you don't really have, you don't have any more than 4 amas over there. So now he continues to talk about a case if on Shabbos you left the boat and then went off. So now you were Koine Shvisa on the ground, and then afterwards, if the ship then leaves and goes outside the tchum, then you only have the area of the boat itself. 4 amas, like when a person goes out of the tchum. In the case of a plane that lands on Shabbos, what I'm given to understand is if at all possible you stay on the plane, but practically speaking you're usually not going to be able to. You would have to go into the terminal, in which case you can only stay in the terminal for Shabbos. You can't go any place outside of that, and then you have all kinds of issues also what you do with your luggage and what you do with your muktzah items and so on and so forth. So in short, it can get complicated, and the better thing to do is just to fly earlier in the week and avoid the whole issue.